Live from the Valley of the Sun, sharing the news unedited, untainted, and unscreened. The real news you'll never hear on Fox, CNN, or NBC. Serious issues affecting all fellow Americans and the world. The man whose website is monitored by more feds than Osama bin Laden. The man who truly is not ready to make nice. Here's Michael Herzog with The American Awakening.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Monday, March 16th, 2009 edition of The American Awakening. I'm your host, Michael Herzog, and I'll be with you for the next 3 hours. I've got a very interesting week coming up for you this week. Now, I'm not going to introduce my guest just yet, but I'll tell you who's coming up tomorrow, none other than Lindsay Williams. And we all know that Lindsay walked and talked and is in communications with the elite and knows exactly what's going on. He's going to come up and share some of his views and some of his knowledge with us tomorrow. Wednesday, we've got Mary Starrett, member of the Constitution Party, that's coming up. She just wrote an article very recently called We Can't Get Enough of What We Don't Want. That'll be an interesting program. And we've got Larry Pratt coming up Friday. There's all kinds of draconian gun legislation in Congress in these pending legislation. And we're going to have Larry talk about how what's happening with that, how it's progressing, and how it would affect us. Now, with that in mind, last week, folks, I mentioned that I was going to do a show on 9/11 relating to the mechanics of how the World Trade Center towers came down. Now, as we know, there have been many theories about how the buildings came down and what hit the buildings, some plausible, some a bit fringe. Now, I've contended in the past that how they came down wasn't as important as finding who was responsible for bringing them down. But this program today, folks, is an exception. And I think as you listen, you'll see why. There are, however, many unanswered questions about 9/11 that, well, to date have not been answered by the American government. So that leaves it up to curious, truth-seeking, and dedicated individuals to do their own research. Now, the lady that I'm going to introduce to you here in a moment is one of those individuals. All Americans were affected by 9/11. Some lost relatives. Some lost jobs. Some were and are to this day crippled and dying from the aftermath. This particular lady took the initiative to make a movie out of the surrounding events and to share it with the world. The movie is called 9/11 Mysteries. Many of you have already seen it. She's honored me by coming on my program today to share information with us, folks. And by the way, it's the first time that this information has ever been shared. And I feel honored to have her come on my program to do it. Should feel honored to have her share it with you. You're the first listening audience that is ever going to hear this. Because what she's found, folks, may, and I emphasize may, just be the answer to some of these unanswered and burning questions of which our government refuses to answer. And with that, let me introduce Sophia. Sophia, are you with me today?
Yes, Michael. Thank you so much.
Welcome to the American Awakening, Sophia. And I have to share with the listening audience that I've been in contact with Sophia on a regular basis for quite some time now, and she's gotten to be a very dear friend of mine because she is a diligent activist, diligent researcher, and she is a definite truth seeker. With that, let's jump into this, Sophia. Now, you made the movie 9/11 Mysteries, and it's been viewed by Lord knows how many hundreds of thousands of people. Very, very interesting movie. For those who haven't seen it, I would suggest you order a copy from Sophia or go online. You can watch it there. A lot of interesting information in it. But with that, Sophia, let's share a little bit of what your research has uncovered of late.
Well, again, I'm really a person who, now that I've been in this rabbit hole, has gotten into connecting dots. And when you learn more and more and you remember things that people told you, for instance, some of those New Yorkers that you mentioned earlier in the show, the rescue workers who are so horribly affected by the time they spent on the pile, as they call it, ground zero. As I was reading a book recently, which I was going to include in my online store, avatarproducts.com, you can access that from the website 911mysteries.com, I was reading this book called The Fluoride Deception, and as you may or may not know, the fluoridation of water has been an ongoing thing in this country now for 50 or 60 years, and recently Governor Schwarzenegger, actually a year ago, mandated that the Metropolitan Water District of California begin to refluoridate its water, and that all local municipalities add fluoride to whatever water they're not getting from MWD, because it supplies 50% of our water. So I woke up to fluoride again. I had not known much about it, and I began to read this book. And as I was reading this book, I just was connecting dots with 9/11. And I know it sounds bizarre, because we think of fluoride as something people put in toothpaste. But let me tell you a little bit about this element, fluorine. Fluorine is the earth element from which fluoride is formed or is made. Fluorine is the most reactive element on the earth. I read in this book that fluorine cuts through steel like butter, burns asbestos, and reacts violently with most organic material. All right, fine. So what's fluoride? Fluoride is what fluorine likes to do with itself, because it's very, very reactive, and it wants its valence electrons. That means it has a belt of electrons that are in flux. They like to hold on to other substances for a little more stability, you could call it. They have fluorine has core tension. So its electrons go and they grab onto other elements like oxygen to form fluoride. You have tetrafluoride, hexafluoride, oxyfluoride, oxygen fluoride, all kinds of silica fluorides. Fluorine likes to become fluoride. And fluoride is no less reactive than fluorine. So this material has been known to the United States government for more than 70 years. In fact, it was so volatile and so even explosive, you could say, that they left it alone before World War II. But then the U.S. government got in a race with the Germans to produce artillery, explosives, whatnot. In Maine, the atomic bomb, and they were very anxious to exploit fluoride as much as possible. It is an element that is used in the smelting of metals, which means that it is so quick and it's so hungry, fluorine or fluoride, that it goes into ores and it extracts the metals from the ores. It'll extract molten metal, molten aluminum. It's used in smelting. So in metal industries like steel, the steel industry, in the aluminum industry, in the uranium enrichment industry, because it will pull uranium out of uranium ore, fluoride is used. And fluoride has been the basis of a giant industry in this country for a very long time. Now, it's a very harmful element as well. I keep saying element. Fluorine is the element. Fluoride is any kind of compound made with fluorine. So in the history of this substance, workers, it's been estimated that there were 600,000 people who have worked with fluorine or fluoride since the 1940s, and many of them have fallen ill. Well, we think of fluoride as something that goes in toothpaste to protect our teeth. And in fact, when that discovery was made, because fluoride is so, it's such a killer thing that it will actually kill the bacteria on your teeth, and therefore you are less prone to dental caries. But the fluoridation of water occurred after they decided to put a bright, shiny, smiley face on fluoride itself by adding it to toothpaste. And in this manner, the harmful effects of this substance, fluoride, as it was used in industry for all these decades, got masked, because now the public at large was absorbing fluoride from water and from their toothpaste. And it would be very hard to say when government workers began to litigate because of their injuries, their bodily injuries, their respiratory injuries, their skeletal injuries. Fluorosis is a very harmful condition that takes many years to develop. But it would be difficult for these government workers to allege that they absorbed fluoride from the factories and plants that they worked in if it was added to the drinking water at large. Are you following?
I'm following. Continue.
All right. So that is how fluoride became kind of a ubiquitous public thing, and how they made Americans think that this was something beneficial to us. Well, I can go on about properties of fluoride, but we're at our break now, so I'll come back.
Oh, you're good. I love it. One of the few people that stops talking when the music starts. Okay, I'll tell you what. We'll be back at 3. Michael Herzog, The American Awakening, with my special guest, Sophia, the maker of 9/11 Mysteries. And, folks, this is going to be a very valuable program today. You're going to find out a lot here. Stick with us. Call your friends and neighbors. It's going to be a fantastic show. Be right back. We're back with The American Awakening and my special guest, Sophia, maker of 9/11 Mysteries, and she's talking about fluorine and fluoride. And for those of you who haven't figured this out yet, just stick around because it's really going to get good. She's going to connect a few more dots here. With that, Sophia, let's get back. The benefits of fluoride. They figured it was beneficial. Go ahead, continue with your story.
Right. The properties of fluorine are that it's highly reactive, and when it forms salts called fluorides, it can be even more reactive. So this compound, fluoride, was used in the smelting and still is used in the smelting of metals, meaning that it goes in and it extracts the ores in the process of manufacturing. And actually, there was a substance called pot liner that came out of the aluminum industry. It was just this gunky, horrendous fluoride that would line the pots in which they were smelting the aluminum. And they found that the best use for pot liner was just to throw it in our drinking water. Yet it was a toxin in all of its other generations. You know, when it was in the factory as pot liner, it was very corrosive. But when they put it in the drinking water, then it became beneficial to us. Now, why did they do this? As I said earlier, they did this to mask the effects of fluoride on workers, the many hundreds of thousands of workers who participated in helping the United States build its munitions, particularly the atomic bomb in the Manhattan Project, and who were getting sick. Now, you remember New Jersey, Michael, being known as the Garden State?
Oh, yes.
Yes. Okay, today you drive through New Jersey, and it ain't no Garden State. It's industry, smokestacks. And the one reason why New Jersey stopped being the Garden State was that there was a DuPont fluoride plant in New Jersey, which had was belching out huge quantities of hydrogen fluoride, at least 30,000 pounds, maybe as much as 165,000 pounds each month over the farmland around it. And farmers started to notice that their cattle were too stiff to walk and grazing on their bellies, and horses were dropping dead, and the peach trees and the apples and all the vegetables were dying off. And it was attributed to the DuPont plant. But the farmers wanted to stand, you know, patriotic to America, and they didn't litigate until after the war. And when the American people started to litigate for the damage and injury that had been done to them by way of fluoride in their years working for the government, for the military, that's when the government decided to mask its the destruction of this substance that everyone was handling. Now I want to get a little bit into 9/11. We remember things from my film and from other people's work, the explosions going off in the buildings, right? Before the towers fell, the firefighters reported explosions as they were evacuating people. The maintenance worker, William Rodriguez, is famous for the underground explosions that he reported when he was standing in the sub-basement at 8:30, 8:40 in the morning before the planes actually hit. And we've got people on the street. Even the CBS reporters were coming back to the station saying that there were explosions rocking the area. Well, we have always asked the question how those enormous core columns, those 47 core columns vertically going up through the buildings, were destroyed, were cut. The popular theory of explosives works to a point, but we saw in my film at about 25 minutes some video. In fact, there are several different shots of this. The North Tower has already come down. It's external skeleton, it's exterior, but there are these 700 feet of core still standing. And we get to see this for a couple of seconds, and then this steel just vaporizes in front of our eyes. And everybody is saying to this day, how did that happen? Now, there have been theories like directed energy weapons. Stephen Jones has his nano thermite, his super thermite with aluminum added, or sulfur rather added. And I am proposing that something that was already known to the perps for so many years, fluorine gas, might have been used as a diffusive agent to get up into that central shaft and start working on the core columns before the buildings came down. Now, you will remember that in my film, and I believe I was the first to get this statement from Scott Forbes, from deep in his memory. Scott Forbes worked for a fiduciary trust, and he remembered hearing for several weeks on the floor above him this construction going on and all these incredibly loud bumps and thumps like giant dumpsters are being turned over. And William Rodriguez recalled the same sounds on the day of the towers collapsing. And these enormously heavy, heavy sounds of the ceiling just rocking also with the force upstairs. And I'm wondering if those were enormous canisters of pressurized gas that were then detonated, and that gas was working on the core as the people were evacuating, because the structure was still very, very strong and would stand, and then they took it down an hour and a half later. So that's one beginning dot that I connected. And now this is not a proven theory. This is me just saying what if and how about. So, shall I go on?
Well, let me interject here. First of all, I want to mention to the listening audience, if you have not seen 9/11 Mysteries, it may warrant you going back in and taking another look. But Sophie was mentioning these the 47 core towers, and that's specifically at 23 minutes, 5 seconds into the movie, folks. So you can buy a copy of the movie and go online and look at it, and you run it up to 2305, and you'll see exactly what she's talking about. But also, Sophia, I wanted to add into the mix here that I remember hearing testimony by William Rodriguez where I think it was the 34th floor that was sealed off, and he knew that there was nothing up there, yet he was hearing a lot of commotion going on the 34th floor, and he was literally he was afraid to open the door and go in there, so he bypassed that. And this is during, I believe, the rescue when he was going up into the thing and pulling people out.
That's
now,
right.
There was also another report, and it may have been Scott Forbes. You have to forgive me. I'm not real clear on this. But there was somebody, maybe it was Scott Forbes, that was talking about a lot of activity going on a floor up above him that he knew to be vacant.
Right, and that was when offices were being redone. Yes, and that was the 98th floor. I'm blanking on the name. Begins with an A. It's an insurance company. Aon or something like that. Anyway,
AIG?
What? No, it was not
AIG. AIG?
No.
Okay.
Anyway, why I'm blanking, I have no idea. But Willie Rodriguez did hear on that construction floor, the 34th floor, a lot of this bumping and thumping, and that was the day of the event. Now, another thing he reported was the very unfortunate injuries that occurred to Felipe David. He was another maintenance worker who was in the sub-basement a couple of levels below William Rodriguez when that first explosion went off. And he came running upstairs screaming, explosion, explosion, and Willie reported that his skin was hanging from his armpits. Now, I want to make a connection here with the Cuyahoga River Manhattan Project plant. It was called the Harshaw Chemical Plant in Cleveland. And they only allowed African Americans to work on with fluoride inside the plant. Why? Because white people's skin was way too sensitive. It would start to redden and chap and flake, and they couldn't tolerate the irritation. But black people had hardier skin, and they didn't seem to complain as much. So the here we go. Suspense.
That's all right. Okay, we're going to come back, and we're going to talk about the density of the skin. We're going to go into a lot more, folks. I hope you're getting out of this what I'm getting out of this. This could throw a whole different perspective on what happened that day. We'll be back at 3. Michael Herzog, The American Awakening, with my special guest, Sophia. If you haven't seen this movie, folks, you need to get a copy of it and see it. AvatarProducts.com. Be right back.
Something happening here. What it is ain't exactly clear.
All right, folks, we're back with The American Awakening. My special guest, Sophia, the maker of 9/11 Mysteries. And we're talking about the Cuyahoga River, the Harshaw Chemical Treatment Plant. And in that plant, they had black workers working because the black workers' skin was more resilient to rashes and chafing than other white people's skin because of what they were working with. But anyway, go ahead and continue your story, Sophia.
Okay, so I'm actually going to read from the book. At this plant, the Harshaw plant, the engineers had invented a way to add extra fluoride molecules to uranium tetrafluoride to manufacture the vital hexafluoride process gas needed for uranium enrichment. Okay, so remember, there are all kinds of these fluoride gas combinations, tetrafluoride, hexafluoride, blah, blah, fluoride. But in this case, we're talking about hexafluoride. So this woman, Gloria Porter, this is 1943. She's 22 years old. And on she started work 1943. October 9th, 1945, she saw a man eaten alive by the fluoride acid when a storage tank at Area C exploded. Quote, I heard this rumble, remembers Porter. All of a sudden, this cast iron storage tank just burst open, and the smoke, the fumes from the acid, you just couldn't see nothing. And that stuff was rolling, and the more it rolled, the further we would run. A male worker helped Porter to scramble over the barbed wire fence that surrounded Area C. As she stared back, a horrific image was seared in her mind. She watched men struggling through a giant cloud of hydrofluoric acid. I saw all of them coming out with hunks of flesh just falling off them, and the stomach, and their arms. And I said, my God, I can't look at that. That man can't live. He looked just like bone, but he fell right then. Okay, here's what a rescue worker told me. He had worked on the pile for 3 months, and he told me that they looked for bodies, and they didn't find them. But what they did find, and they would scream when they found this stuff, were these things that felt like wet rags. And when they picked them up, it was shredded human flesh, chunks of raggedy flesh. So put that together. This is what fluoride does to the body. It rips the flesh off the body. Now, let's remember what William Rodriguez said about Felipe David. He came up screaming explosion, and his skin was hanging from his armpits and from his face. His skin had been ripped off. So there are some more dots.
Okay, and I want to also interject. There was a big puzzling question to this day about this melted metal that was down, I believe it was in the basement section, that had continued sit there for weeks on end, and it didn't fuse. I mean, it was just melted. And there's satellite pictures of this,
right?
And
nobody has ever
given a conclusive answer about what could have caused that. And of course, the government avoids it like the plague. It would be safe to say that this fluorine gas would have been the answer to this molten metal. Would you say?
Well, fluorine or fluoride has the ability to go in and extract molten ore, liquid metal. I don't know quite how it does this, but I would say that the presence of fluorine or fluoride might very well explain all those pools of molten iron underneath Ground Zero. In addition, there was a lot of this white smoke stuff, which when the video of the firefighters spraying water, you saw this white stuff coming up, and it could have been, but most likely it was not. It was something else. It's been theorized that that was molecularizing material that was going up, but it could have been this white fluoride smoke also. I remember a rescue worker telling me that as he was working on Ground Zero, he went into this little like gully that was just full of this white stuff, and he took one breath and he was vomiting and he was sick, and he had to be rushed to get aid. Now, these people also, the rescue workers, they are losing their teeth. And one of the effects of fluoride is that it makes you, I think the word is edentulous, it takes your teeth out. And all of those factory workers from the 40s are now toothless, and they have lost their teeth. Fluoride gets into the bone and the teeth and starts destroying them. It actually is stored in bones and teeth and starts eating from in there. So the fact that rescue workers from Ground Zero are losing all their teeth, and so did the military and industrial fluoride workers from, you know, decades ago lose all their teeth, that's a parallel. Wouldn't you say?
That, well, it's fantastic because, as you know, myself as an investigator, I do a lot of connecting the dots as well. And for all of these years, there have been so many theories that have come out, some plausible, some a little bit fringe and so forth. You know, the no-plane theory, the pod theory, the hologram theory, the you know, about what hit the towers, and then the space beams theory and the directed energy weapons theory and the thermite theory with thermite. But none of it, none of those explains that molten metal, none of it. None of it explains, as that clip, and we talked during the 25 minutes and 3 seconds into the clip is where the towers just basically disintegrate. Nothing has ever explained that, and I believe in the NIST report, they explained it by omitting it. So, you know, the diligent researchers are still are looking for the answers to the questions of which the government's not going to give us. So if we're ever going to get any, you know, concrete or, you know, preponderance of the evidence answers, we're going to have to do it ourselves. And this is why I give you such accolades, Sophia, for, you know, you're so brilliant at connecting dots. And in reading one book about fluorine, then the penny drops and you say, wait a minute, that could very well explain what is happening here. But beyond that, there was, you know, there's the question about the windows in the buildings. Nobody knows how they shattered out. You might want to touch on that a little bit.
Right. It just occurred to me within the last couple of days. It's always stuck in my mind that one thing fluoride does is it etches glass. Wherever there is fluoride being belched into the air, there are, you'll find car windows that are etched, as they call it. And that's also a word used for acid. Acid etches. It corrodes other substances like glass and metals. Okay, so here we have all this etching going on all through the decades as a consequence of being in the proximity of fluoride and fluoride gases. And at Ground Zero, all those buildings around where the towers had stood, there the glass was blown out. And we thought, I thought, it was from the force of explosions. Well, fine, it could be. But it could also be that if those explosions involved enormous quantities of fluorine, then the fluorine etched that glass deeply enough that it shattered it. And even the firefighters in the Naudé Brothers film were saying when they arrived on the scene, the lobby of the North Tower, that all the windows were blown out, yet the plane hit way above. But those underground explosions were right below where those lobby windows were. So maybe there was some effect of fluorine just etching so forcefully, so instantaneously, that it shattered all the glass in those windows. I don't know. This is just a thought.
Well, but I give you credit for, I mean, let's face it, 7+ years after the fact, nobody's had that thought. Right. And you know, the fluorine alone could not have caused, you know, some of these sectioned major, I mean, heavy, very heavy pieces of steel that were thrown across the street and stuck inside of other buildings. But they had to find a way to literally, you know, disintegrate or, you know, get rid of these core towers. And to me, that, you know, the fluorine theory, I didn't know, you know, I thought, well, okay, fluoride, you brush your teeth, and yeah, they put it in the water, but I had no idea it was derived from something that was this toxic or volatile. So, you know, in a combination thereof, maybe a combination of certain beams, you know, where thermate was used on them, but yet for the core towers there was fluorine gas canisters used, which would explain that noise that Willie Rodriguez was hearing and Scott Forbes was hearing, because none of that has been explained either. Plus, you had mentioned asbestos, and, you know, we know that they were in a lawsuit for 10 years prior to try to get whoever the owner was of the World Trade Center to clean up the asbestos problem, which the cost to do that would be upwards of $1 billion. And so this particular, you know, fluorine would have, you know, solved that issue as well. I mean, you know, there's just so many dots to connect, and there's so many unanswered questions, but we're getting there. Anyway, I hear the music coming up. We'll take a break. We'll be back at 3. Michael Herzog, The American Awakening, with my special guest, Sophia, talking about what brought the towers down. And we'll let her comment when we get back. See you in 3, folks.
Too late to stop.
All right, folks, we're back with The American Awakening and my special guest, Sophia, and what we're covering here is connecting the dots. This very well, fluorine gas, folks, could very well solve the question of the burning flesh. It could solve the molten metal. It could solve broken glass. But what about the symptoms of the rescue workers? Let's go into that, Sophia.
Yeah, well, as you know, these rescue workers have been reporting symptoms now for a long, long time, and they have these compound respiratory ailments. They are showing signs of asbestosis. They have skeletal joint problems, all kinds of things. But I want to cover a little bit here what the effects of fluorine can be. There was a Danish researcher, Kai Roholm, who reported that on the crippling skeletal fluorosis that he found in fluorine and fluoride workers. And then the voice that opposed him was this guy, Edward Largent, who worked at Kettering Labs. And we're going back into the 1950s. And Largent poo-pooed the whole idea of fluorine or fluoride giving any problems to anyone. But he, actually it was Robert Kehoe at Kettering, who privately told the company Alcoa that 120 workers at its Messina, New York, aluminum smelting plant had bone fluorosis, and that 33, that's a quarter of them, were severe cases that showed evidence of disability ranging in estimated degree up to 100%. So working with fluoride can completely, completely put you out of commission. So in addition, Roholm, the Dane, concluded that fluoride poisoning was hydra-headed, meaning that it produced several groups of symptoms, including stomach, bone, lung, skin, nervous system problems, and these often presented themselves at different times in different people. And so fluoride injury was difficult to diagnose and difficult to attribute to fluoride because it could sometimes take a long time to show up. Now, I want to go into this Edward Largent. He was a spokesperson for the Kettering Lab, which was a government lab. Largent had a hard time finding willing human subjects to test. He built a gas chamber, which was surrounded by sheets of plastic, and he put his own son in this gas chamber. And his son, Edward Largent Jr., was 17 years old. He was stuck in this gas chamber June 22, 1953. Cold cream was applied to his face, and the experiment was going to go on for 4 weeks, 6 hours at a time, with weekends off. I'm going to read what he said. "I had to sit in this cage," the son remembered. "A small fan was placed in front of him to improve the gas circulation. Outside, his father operated the controls and watched. The walls of the chamber were made from transparent plastic sheeting. His skin reddened and flaked. He read fiction to relieve the tedium, eyes stinging and smarting. The average dose for the 6 weeks was 6.7 parts per million, almost 2.5 times what his mother had received." She was one of these unwitting forced to sit there in that chamber as well. "For one remarkable week in July 1953, the scientist gassed his son with doses of hydrogen fluoride that averaged 9.1 parts per million, climbed as high as 11.9, almost four times the maximum allowable concentrations then set by federal authorities. The son's urine level spiked at 40 parts per million." Okay, so now we're going to go into the future. What happened to Largent, who himself sat in that, took fluoride for a while to see what it would do to him? The elder Largent, both knees were hurting because of the deposition of fluoride. Ironically, he seemed to have wound up suffering from the very type of skeletal disability his industry-funded scientific studies said did not exist. Edward Largent Sr. died in December 1998, 5 days after an operation for a broken hip, suffered after a nighttime fall. Gripped by Alzheimer's dementia, Largent had forgotten to use his walker to get to the bathroom. And the son wondered whether his father's bone pain later in life was because of his fluoride experiments. So these experiments that were done on this guy and his family himself resulted in their own perhaps early deaths, their very painful deaths. The wife, Kathleen, had a leaking heart valve and a nerve disorder known as myasthenia gravis. And they have also felt that arthritis, hip fracture, Alzheimer's, and other central nervous system disorders can be linked to fluoride exposure. Now, when we look at our rescue workers, those guys are in very, very bad shape. And yes, it could be due to the, you know, pulverized glass and pulverized carpet and computer parts and asbestos and the fine, fine size of all this stuff. But it could also be due to the properties of this particular compound, fluoride. It all kind of is believable. We have to look into it, though. Somebody's got to start doing specific tests for skeletal fluorosis on these guys and the systemic poisoning that fluoride creates.
Well, the problem inherent that I see here is if indeed it was due to the fluorine, you know, we've got fluoride in the toothpaste, fluoride in the water. I mean, as far as litigating something like this, it would be darn near impossible to prove, wouldn't you say?
Well, that's right. But that's what the whole point of putting the fluoride into the toothpaste to begin with. Now, remember that in the early, the toothpaste has sodium fluoride. It's actually a pharmaceutical product. And the early experiments on fluoridating water in Newburgh, New York, they were done with sodium fluoride. But when the government decided to mass fluoridate the water, they didn't have sodium fluoride in those quantities. So they used industrial fluoride, and that's what's used now. It's from the phosphate industry. The mineral ore from which most industrial fluoride is produced is called fluorspar. But the U.S. doesn't have much of that. Instead, the U.S. has one of the world's largest supplies of natural phosphate. And this lies mainly in Florida in these huge, huge deposits. And this is the basis of the production of something called superphosphate fertilizer. And America, from this phosphate arsenal, has its own inexhaustible supply of fluoride. So it's from that industry now that we're getting most of our fluoride. We're getting industrial-grade fluoride, not pharmaceutical fluoride.
Industrial grade. So that means that we're not getting pharmaceutical fluoride in our toothpaste. Are we getting pharmaceutical or industrial grade in our water?
Water is industrial grade. And it's carried in these rubber-lined tanks, And you know what? If it gets into the air, it's a pollutant. If it gets into a lake or a river or a stream, fluoride is a pollutant. But the moment they dump it into your drinking water, oh, it's good for you. It helps your teeth. But you see, it doesn't. All it does is poison you, rot your insides, rot your bones, destroy your mind. It's a neurotoxin. So it works on the brain as well, produces Alzheimer's. But this is how they mask the fact that they're using it. It's one of the most prevalent compounds, substances, chemicals, call it what you want, in industry. It's in, used in the steel industry. It's used in the defense industry ad nauseum. It's used to in the aluminum. And now we have fluorocarbons. I can tell you a little bit about that. Let me just look it up. We have actually, I should go to fluoropolymers, Teflon. What they found was that when hydrogen atoms in a normal hydrocarbon chemical bond are fully replaced with fluorine atoms, the chemical symbol HC becomes FC. So then you get these ultra-durable chemicals. And these chemicals, they're so long-lasting that they are put in things like Scotchgard. They are the main ingredient in Teflon, so that you find them in plastics, aerosols, pharmaceuticals, waterproofers, pesticides, lubricants, firefighting foams. And they are the basis of convenient modern life. When, you know, fast food French fries are in these grease-proof wrappers, that's from a PFC polymer chain. That's what makes it grease-proof. So PFCs, fluoropolymers, they are a new addition to modern life, and we're getting the effects of those. Every time you cook in Teflon, forget about it. You're dosing yourself with fluoride. Every time you sit on your carpet and play with your toys, same thing. All of this stain guard and clothing, there you are again. So the stuff is here to stay. The stuff is magical. We call it inorganic fluoride.
Okay, so, and I believe it was maybe you that enlightened me on this issue, but I had realized, you know, I was being very diligent about what types of foods I buy, and somebody, and I think it was, tipped me off that they're spraying the food with fluoride. I mean, we can't get away from it. And then if we want to try to go and grow our own food or go to the farmer's market, now they're enacting legislation to get rid of that. So we will be totally dependent on these murderers. I mean, because obviously they know the effects of it. They know it's poisonous, and they flat don't care, Sophia.
No, they don't care.
Okay. Tell you what, top of the hour coming up. Sophia, did you want to stick around and share more, or did you have some other things to do?
Yeah, I could stay another quarter hour or so, but yeah.
Okay. Folks, we'll be back after the news, about 6 minutes after. Michael Herzog, The American Awakening, with my special guest, Sophia. Stick around. She's got more to add. We'll keep her up for another segment. Be back after the news.
Yeah, I'm not sure I could. They say time heals everything, but I'm still waiting.